Two suspects in an undercover drug sting shooting face felony charges and six-figure bails. Good evening, I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck, and that's our top story night on Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce visits a Helena gym to find folks working off their holiday meals. And in our feature interview, reporter Edward O'Brien talks with the executive director of Lutheran Social Services of Montana about adoption. Two suspects involved in the shooting of a Missoula undercover detective appeared in Missoula County Justice Court today facing six-figure bails. The Missoulian reports 25-year-old Joshua Lee Robinson faces charges of deliberate homicide and robbery after he shot an undercover narcotics officer while trying to steal the detective's drug money Wednesday. His bail is set at $250,000. 22-year-old Jasmine Beeler is accused of conspiracy to commit robbery in association with Robinson. She is also accused of criminal distribution of dangerous drugs after an alleged sale of $600 worth of methamphetamine to an undercover cop on November 14th. Her bail is set at $150,000. Deputy Missoula County Attorney Andrew Paul wrote an affidavit stating that Robinson and another man approached the undercover detective in the Rosehours parking lot Wednesday. The detective asked to only deal with one man, and the other walked away. According to the affidavit, the remaining suspect asked to see the money before selling the detective drugs. At this time, the suspect pulled a pistol on the officer and demanded the money be given over. The officer pulled out his own weapon and was shot by the suspect. The injured officer left the hospital yesterday. His name hasn't been released. Both Robinson and Beeler are scheduled for preliminary hearings on December 13th. The Montana Department of Justice's Division of Criminal Investigation is still investigating the case.
And in other news from around the state, those returning to Western Montana over the weekend from their holiday gatherings should prepare to take it easy on the road home. National Weather Service meteorologist Ryan Leach says a multifaceted system will be moving into our listening area, bringing snow and cold temperatures.
Saturday night into Sunday, as the snow, especially in the mountains, starts to increase from the west and start affecting the passes like Lookout and Lolo and Lost Trail passes, and then up into Glacier Park. Then by the time Monday morning rolls around, you know, we'll have several inches of snow in the mountains. It'll start raining in the valleys. One of the things we're really concerned about is the valleys of northwest Montana, you know, up to the west of Kalispell mostly, and around Libby and some of those areas. And those narrow valleys with the cold air will stay entrenched in there, and there's potential for, you know, pockets of freezing rain and things like that impacting things.
There is a winter storm warning in effect for western Montana tomorrow night through late Tuesday night. Leach adds that moisture only signals the beginning of the shift in weather, as an Arctic front also approaches from the north and the east, bringing snow, wind, and much colder temperatures.
It's not one of the typical ones that just comes across the Continental Divide. It'll come from the north as well. It's a very deep cold air system. It's something that happens every 2 to 5 years typically, that we see something that cold come down. And with it, we're going to see some strong winds. Blowing snow at times will reduce the visibility, and we'll get more snow out of it. Concerned that, you know, there might be some flash freezing of any wet surfaces like the roads that could make travel difficult for a while.
Leach says in some areas early next week, those winds will make cold weather even colder.
You know, it'll stay windy. Also, areas like Kalispell, Columbia Falls, and Bad Rock Canyon, the eastern portions of Missoula near Hellgate Canyon, you know, the winds are going to keep going through there for a couple of days. They're going to have some wind chills that are down around negative teens for the wind chills. But up in the mountains, you know, they get the east winds up there with the very cold air. And, you know, minus 20, minus 30 type wind chills up in some of the mountains, like around Whitefish in that area. So it's going to be a very cold, very wet, and kind of a prolonged system.
Again, Leach encourages those folks driving home this weekend to take extra care on the road.
Leave early and be prepared to go a little bit longer, drive slow. And make sure you have some sort of safety kit in your car, you know, bring extra water and make sure you have plenty of warm clothing in case something does happen. It's going to start. In fact, it already has started off to our west in Washington State. They've had reports of freezing rain and ice pellets, and I know there's some difficult driving conditions over there, and it's only going to spread east. So, yeah, for those who are traveling home on Sunday, make sure you're prepared for bad weather, cold conditions, and be prepared to take it easy and slow.
We will have more on this weekend's forecast later in our broadcast.
The Montana Supreme Court has upheld the conviction of a 27-year-old Stevensville woman who is serving a 40-year prison sentence for the hit-and-run death of a pedestrian near Missoula. Katie Garding had sought a new trial, arguing her public defender wasn't allowed to adequately cross-examine her boyfriend, Jason Bordeaux, about his testimony and whether it occurred in exchange for dropping a persistent felony offender designation in a burglary charge he faced. Yesterday, the High Court rejected that argument, as well as one that a defense medical expert was not allowed to counter prosecution testimony about injuries suffered by the victim, 25-year-old Bronson Parsons of East Missoula. Parsons died on New Year's Day 2008. Garding was charged in March 2010 and convicted of vehicular homicide while under the influence in June 2011.
A Kalispell woman who pleaded guilty to embezzling nearly $143,000 from her former employer has been given a 10-year suspended sentence in order to pay restitution. The Daily Interlake reports District Judge David Ortley sentenced 44-year-old Tyra Desert on November 21st. Prosecutors suspect Desert of embezzling the money between 2005 and 2011 while she worked as a bookkeeper for the Jesco Marine and Power Sports in Kalispell. The theft was discovered in May 2011. An audit of the first 5 months of 2011 showed over $12,000 was missing, and a complete audit found the total loss was $142,723. Desert had been the company's bookkeeper for 17 years.
The Montana Supreme Court has ordered a Billings attorney to appear before the court on January 7th for a public censure for threatening another attorney. The High Court says attorney Jeffrey Michaels' license will be placed on probation for a year, and he must complete a counseling assessment with a focus on anger. The Billings Gazette reports the Supreme Court agreed with a recommendation from the Commission on Practice that Michael be censured for making, quote, abusive, disruptive, and threatening statements, end quote, to another Billings attorney, Elizabeth Honaker. The complaint filed in November 2012 stems from Honaker's handling of a petition for post-conviction relief filed on behalf of Lionel Ellis, who argued Michael coerced him into pleading no contest to a 2007 arson charge.
Many of us are still waking up from a turkey coma. This time of year, our exercise routine can sometimes take a backseat to quality time with family and friends. Capital reporter Dan Boyce visits a Helena gym to find some folks resisting that urge to laze around.
At the Capital City Health Club, about a dozen women, most retired, are shaking their stuff in a morning Zumba session.
I love to dance.
Susan Turgeon takes the class. Zumba, it's basically dance aerobics. There's some hip-hop, some salsa in there, merengue. The ladies work to follow the quick feet of instructor Mallory McDowell. She's adding in some new music today.
Sometimes they're happy, sometimes they're mad because they have to learn some new steps, but it's good in the long run.
The holidays, big meals, perhaps a bit of couch time, board games. Dancer Susan Turgeon says this time of year she tries to spend more time in the gym.
Yeah, I step it up because I go to Weight Watchers and I get weighed every week.
Outside the Zumba room, a few people are plugging away on stair climbers, others hitting the weights. Dennis Crawford is doing some stretching. It's his first time back.
In some time.
He started coming to the gym less than a year ago, and he says he enjoyed it, but he got lazy as the months went by. It just happens for him around this season.
Oh, without question.
He wants it to be different this time around, though.
At my age, I got arthritis, so I figure exercise will do it good.
Capital City staff say dips in gym participation actually seem to happen more from changes in the weather than the holiday season. The nicer it is outside, the fewer people come in to work out. But group exercise manager Tammy Hay says the real busy time, yeah, January.
Everybody wants the New Year's resolutions, and of course, usually top priority is getting back into fitness.
Still, Hay recommends people try to stay as true to their fitness regimen as possible throughout the holidays.
Because you know that you're going to be indulging during those times. And also, working out and staying fit helps relieve a little bit of the stress that goes on during the holidays as well.
I'm Dan Boyce reporting in Helena.
We're coming to the end of National Adoption Month. Recent celebrations have marked the adoption of at least 29 children in Great Falls and Billings. Lutheran Social Services of Montana operates a statewide adoption agency. In this evening's feature interview with Edward O'Brien, Catherine Sable says hundreds more Montana children are waiting to be welcomed into new families of their own. Sable tells us more about Lutheran Social Services of Montana.
Well, we were originated in about 1954, and we were established by Lutheran churches across Montana to serve all kinds of community needs, just depending on what the times required. And so initially, we did a lot of work with Lutheran disaster relief. We've done some work with refugee resettlement, but kind of the crown jewel of our work is that we operate a statewide adoption agency.
I know this is a very general, broad question, but tell us about the kids in the foster care system. Generally speaking, what are their ages, circumstances? How do they end up there?
Well, what we do is specialize in infant adoption. So most of the work that we do is with birth mothers who come into us who are experiencing an unplanned pregnancy, and they tell us that they want to explore the two options, whether they want to go forward with an adoption or if they want to try to parent the child. So we call ourselves options counselors, and we work with them at their pace throughout the course of their pregnancy to help them make their decision. And if they make the decision to adopt a child, we also, on the other side, are working with adoptive parents who are involved with the birth mother generally from about a month before her due date forward. So we practice open cooperative adoption. Our adoptive couples meet our birth mothers and get to know each other before the baby shows up. And then often our adoptive couples are right there at the hospital when the baby's born. So they meet the baby within a few minutes or hours of birth.
And that's a month before birth, is that right?
Yeah, for the most part. We try to have them meet up a month before the baby shows up. Sometimes we have what we call surprise babies, where we'll get a call from a hospital saying, yes, a young lady has just delivered a baby and she'd like to talk to you about placing this child adoptively. So in that case, we don't have the pre-meeting, but we like it. We like establishing that rapport between our moms and our adoptive couples before the baby shows up.
Why establish that rapport? Why not just go into it? What's the phrase? Blind, I guess.
Well, you know, historically there was no relationship between adoptive couples and the person who placed her baby with them. And we found that it's really helpful in the development of the child for the adoptive couple to say, oh, you know, I met your mom when she was pregnant with you, and talk a little bit about those circumstances. It gives the child a real stronger sense of his or her roots and the fact that, oh, my mom was a living, breathing person who, you know, had this nice relationship with the people who are my parents now. And so we find that's a nice beginning. It quells the fears of the birth mom because she has the chance to meet the people who are going to be parenting her child. And that often is kind of a reality check for her. Like, these are the people who my baby's going to live with, and I like them, and so this is going to be a good decision for me to make. So, and it also helps quell the fears of the adoptive couple, because they often have their own image of what the mother of the baby might be like. And to have everybody sit around a table and talk to each other and see that we're all humans and we're, you know, working out this beautiful arrangement for this baby, it's generally a really nice opportunity to get this adoption rolling, you know, in the right way.
Is it ever a good idea to have a relationship between the birth mother and the baby, or the child and the parents, you know, as the years go on? Is that ever an option or not?
It is an option, and it's interesting. We have the wide spectrum of people who take advantage of that option in a good way. We've had adoptive fathers walk a birth mother down the aisle when she gets married. We've had a lot of cases where our children know their birth mom. They may call her birth mom, or they may call her by name, and she comes in and out of their lives sometimes for birthdays. They exchange Christmas gifts. The literature tells us that the more relationship there is between the birth mom and the child that she chose to place for adoption, the better the child's chances are of not falling into some of the traps that happen to adopted children, you know, just a lifetime of feeling rejected or feeling that they were not wanted or any of those things. So it's really very healthy when it can happen.
Boy, it doesn't get complicated, huh?
We can complicate it as adults, but as far as the child's concerned, it's not complicating or confusing. It's just what life looks like to those children.
How do you all help a birth mother sort out what she wants to do, even, you know, before she's convinced she wants to go ahead with an adoption?
Well, we're required by law to see them for 3 hours before they can legally terminate their parental rights, and some of our birth moms will spend 20, 30, 40 hours with instead. And we kind of walk them down financial decision-making. This is what it costs to raise a baby, you know, that sort of thing, sort of the more pragmatic stuff. And then emotionally, you know, what were your plans before you found out you were pregnant? Are you going to be able to go forward with those plans? And what do they look like if you have a child in the middle of all this? And we try to be as neutral as possible, because the last thing we want to do is have a mother reluctantly place her child. So we work pretty closely with her. And what we often see is that she vacillates over the course of our counseling. We always take their temperature, like, are you 50-50 adoption and parenting? Are you 80-20? You know, and it's interesting to watch that change over the course of her pregnancy. Sometimes they'll come to us when they have very first found out they were pregnant. So we'll have 9 months of this really sort of interesting fluctuation back and forth. And what we always know is that whoever she is and however convinced she is that she wants to place her baby adoptively, we all have to wait until she gives birth to the baby, because actually delivering the baby and holding the baby is a game changer for a lot of women when they realize, you know, there's hormonal issues, there's evolutionary reasons why it makes good sense for her to hold on tight to that baby. So we make sure that our adoptive couples know that, and that our birth mothers are aware that their feelings are going to be fluctuating through the process. And then when they finally deliver the baby, we wait. Law requires that the birth mother cannot relinquish her parental rights until 72 hours have passed. And so during that 72 hours, it gives her a good time to make a fully informed choice. And sometimes all of our going back and forth kind of goes out the window, because she delivers her baby and it doesn't feel like something she can comfortably do.
How do they find their way to your all's doorstep? I mean, they have so many options between outright termination and adoption. How do they find their way there?
You know, it's a phenomenon. It's not always easy to understand. And I would say that even though we're the age of the internet and all of that, I would say the vast majority of our moms come to us through word of mouth. We have a lot of couples in Montana who've adopted babies. We have a lot of birth moms who have chosen to make an adoption plan for their children. And often they talk about it, and the word gets through to the other people who are interested in making those same choices.
We've talked about adoption, successful adoptions. Meantime, there are a lot of children in Montana who have not yet been adopted, right?
Correct. And we have a recruiter, actually, in through Lutheran Social Services, who's funded by a grant from the Dave Thomas Foundation. And, in fact, we just were notified yesterday that we received the grant again for next year. And her job is to travel around eastern Montana and work with some of these older kids who've been in the foster care system, whose parental rights have been terminated. And through the Wendy's Wonderful Kids program, she works to try to find adoptive couples that are willing to take some of these older children.
That sounds like a tough job.
It's a tough job. It's a real roller coaster. A lot of these children have been in and out of foster homes for much of their lives, and they're really looking for a forever family. And some of the kids, some of her kids on her caseload are 15, 16, 17 years old, and at risk of aging out of the system and not ever having a home to go back to. So we'll place a child, you know, a 17-year-old with an adoptive couple and have them adopt him just so he has somewhere to come home from college or somewhere to go for Christmas. You know, some of these kids' needs are so intense just to have a family, to feel like they come from somewhere. And so it's really hard work, but it is so gratifying when we can place one of the children.
And there's probably a perception among the general public that the older the kid in the foster care system, the bigger the potential for problems, troubles, things like that.
Yeah, it makes sense that a lot of these kids have been through an awful lot, but we haven't met anyone who doesn't wholeheartedly want to find a forever family. And it makes us really happy to be able to find the right match. A lot of our adoptive couples, they provide therapeutic households, and they're very aware of the issues that come with some of these kids, and there are all kinds of resources in the community to help. Sometimes finding the family that's actually going to love you can put you back on a good track as well.
How do these kids get in the system and stay there for so long? Is there a typical story?
I that probably isn't in my realm of knowledge. I think a lot of them are removed from the home by DPHHS, and then the parents, the biological parents, have about a year to try to rehabilitate themselves and get themselves into a good place where they can actually raise the child. And so you see a lot of these parents making real goodwill attempts to try to raise their child or to get custody back of their child, and sometimes it fails. And when that happens, then it's just a matter of finding the right home for the child and finding the couple that's willing to adopt.
Yeah. Ms. Sable, I don't know if you know this, but what do we know about young people who age out of the system? What are their chances for a successful life?
Children who age out of the foster care system really do tend to struggle. There's a much higher level of unemployment, much higher level of addiction. Many of these kids drop out of school without completing. So I would say that a lot of the people who age out of the foster system become some of our biggest challenges as a society, which is another reason why it's such a good, it's a good reason to try to place children when we can.
Who makes good parents then, a good adoptive parent?
Someone who's willing to love the child no matter who he is.
You're asking a lot, huh?
It's what we do as biological parents as well. You know, we certainly, you know, in Lutheran Social Services and through the state, we certainly closely screen everyone who comes to us and says they're interested in being a foster parent or an adoptive parent. And we do criminal background checks and, you know, everything that you would expect us to do to be sure that the baby or the child is going to be safe. But in the big picture, there are so many people out there who are just yearning to have a child. And it's a beautiful thing when those people are actually able to have a child come into their home, and it's an invaluable thing to the child who's found a place to live for the rest of his or her life.
And again, is it a lengthy and expensive process to go through this if you've made that huge decision?
To go through adoption through Lutheran Social Services, we've actually planned it out carefully. So the amount of money that our adoptive couples pay us is actually returned to them through the federal adoption tax credit. So we charge basically the equivalent of what the adoption tax credit would be. When the adoptive couple submits their taxes, then over the next 5 years, all of that money is returned to them.
Okay. Where do people begin this process?
Adoptive couples can contact Lutheran Social Services at any of our five offices, and we have offices in Kalispell, Missoula, Great Falls, Bozeman, and Billings. We can be found on the internet. We even have an 800 number you can call if you wanted to get in touch with one of our counselors.
And that number would be?
That number is 1-800-726-3083.
Executive Director of Lutheran Social Services of Montana, Catherine Sable, thank you so much, and thanks for the work you do, too.
Okay, thank you.
And now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide, there is a winter storm watch in effect tomorrow evening through late Tuesday night for Kootenai Cabinet Region, the West Glacier Region, the Flathead and Mission Valleys, the Lower Clark Fork Region, the Missoula and Bitterroot Valleys, the Bitterroot and Sapphire Mountains, the Butte Blackfoot Region, and Potomac and Sealy Lake Regions. Tonight should be mostly cloudy with a slight chance of light freezing rain with isolated rain and snow showers, and lows should be 17 to 24 degrees. Tomorrow, expect mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain, snow, and a slight chance of freezing rain. Highs will be in the 30s. For Sunday, expect snow with possible rain and freezing rain in the morning. Rain and snow are likely in the afternoon and evening. Highs should be in the mid-30s to lower 40s. For central Montana tonight, expect mostly cloudy skies and a slight chance of snow showers over the mountains with lows 25 to 30 degrees. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy with a chance of mountain snow showers through the day and highs in the 40s. Sunday, expect mostly cloudy skies and a chance of rain and snow with highs 40 to 50 degrees. Expect wind gusts up to 55 miles per hour. Southwest Montana tonight, expect increasing cloud cover, bringing a slight chance of snow and lows in the 20s. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy with a chance of snow and highs 35 to 45 degrees. Sunday will be cloudy with a chance of snow and highs 35 to 45 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Kim Davitt.
Each year in November, the United States observes Lung Cancer Awareness Month. Traditionally, this has been a time to talk about those affected by the disease and the risks of tobacco use. But this year, scientists highlighted the role of air pollution. Just recently, the World Health Organization added outdoor air pollution and particulate matter to the growing list of pollutants known to cause lung cancer. Lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer deaths in the U.S., more deaths than the next three cancers combined, colon, breast, and prostate. While most of us know the risks of smoking, many of us don't consider the risks of just breathing. This is why it's so important to keep our air clean. Fortunately, most of the time, and in most parts of the state, Montanans breathe clean air. But we do have air pollution, especially during winter inversions and summer wildfire season, and it can cause serious problems. That's why the American Lung Association in our state is urging Montanans to speak up in support of two Clean Air Act protections. One is to make the gas we burn in our cars and trucks less polluting. The other is to limit carbon pollution from new power plants. Both will save lives and preserve Montana's healthy air. The Tier 3 standard, under review by the Environmental Protection Agency, would reduce sulfur in gasoline from today's level of 30 parts per million down to 10 parts per million. It would also set stronger tailpipe emissions from new cars and light trucks. The result of these measures will reduce air pollution to the equivalent of taking 33 million cars off the road. When fully implemented, the Lung Association estimates that cleaner gasoline and vehicle standards will annually prevent 15,000 asthma attacks, 3.3 million lost days of work in school, and more than 2,500 premature deaths. The estimated economic and health benefits would total between $8.5 and $22 billion annually by 2030. In Montana, with winter temperatures arriving, we will have inversion conditions in many of our valley towns. Cold air traps air pollution in the cities, and we can have hazardous bad air days that pose a health risk, especially for people with asthma and other lung conditions. Cleaning up vehicle emissions will go a long way to helping reduce pollution that gets trapped in our valleys. Meanwhile, a second regulation proposing limits on carbon pollution from future power plants will help reduce the burden of increased temperatures on our health. Warmer temperatures contribute to smog, which is a risk for people with lung disease and for children whose lungs are still developing. As we've seen in Montana, shorter winters and longer summers contribute to a longer fire season, which results in serious particulate pollution in many Montana communities during the late summer and early fall. It's important that we work to address this problem and ensure that new power plants have set limits when it comes to how much carbon pollution they emit into our air. Montanans who want to speak up for healthy air still have a chance to comment on both of these standards. You can learn more and take action by visiting the Lung Association's Fighting for Air website. It's encouraging to know that most Americans support clean air protections. According to a bipartisan survey by the Lung Association, voters strongly support updating clean air protections, and an astounding 72% specifically want limits on power plant carbon pollution. A clean big sky is one of the chief reasons so many of us are proud to call Montana home. So, as Lung Cancer Month concludes, let's keep in mind, with every breath we take, the importance of clean air to our health.
Kim Davitt is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.